have sailed. I have moved about this world of ours, and ever in search of the finest of its kind, we bring you the tops in Spine Chillers.
And you are listening to Radio Masterpieces on Valley 103.1, serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge.
Smile, though your heart is aching. Smile, even though it's breaking. When there are clouds in the sky, you'll get by if you smile. Through your fear and sorrow, smile, and maybe tomorrow you'll see the sun come shining through for you. Light up your face with gladness, hide every trace of sadness, although a tear may be ever so near. That's the time you must keep on trying. Smile, what's the use of crying? You find that life is still worthwhile if you just smile. Through your fear and sorrow, smile, and maybe tomorrow you'll see the sun come shining through for you. Light up your face with gladness,
smile,
hide every trace of sadness, although a tear may be ever so near. That's the time you must keep on trying. Smile, what's the use of crying? You find that life is still worthwhile if you just smile.
You'll find that life's worthwhile
if you just
smile. This is Bruce Kaplan welcoming you back to another episode of Radio Masterpieces. Tonight we have two great shows for you, one from Suspense and the other from the Whistler series. They're two of my favorites, and they always give you a really good scenario and a wonderful story with really fits our bill. We just listened to the great Jimmy Durante, who happened to be a very, very close friend of Jerry Lewis, who passed away this week. Jerry Lewis was 91 years old, and what a wonderful entertainer he was. One of the reasons why I played the song Smile was because Jerry Lewis sang the song. But when I compared Jerry Lewis's rendition to Jimmy Durante, Jimmy Durante came in light years ahead. And I'm sure that since they were such close friends, that Jimmy Durante would be proud that I played Smile in a tribute to the great Jerry Lewis, who did so much for so many. And also, at this time, I'd like to remember Dean Martin, who also was one of the world's greatest entertainers. If you have any questions for me, please don't hesitate to write to Bruce at radiomasterpieces.com, and I'll be sure to answer you. It's so much fun to bring these great masterpieces, the great mysteries of the 1940s and early 50s, to you every week. Thanks so much for listening, and now let's enjoy our great programs.
Thank you. bring you a star, Miss Nancy Kelly, in the suspenseful narrative of a Hollywood working girl who, one rainy midnight, found death sitting beside her on the ride home. And so, with Drive-In and with the performance of Nancy Kelly, we again hope to keep you in suspense.
I wish I hadn't let Ruth talk me into serving that last car that came to the drive-in that rainy night. It was late, and I was tired. I'd been on my feet all day carrying heavy trays, hopping to it when impatient people glared their headlights on and off in my eyes. And heaven knows there are a lot of impatient people in Hollywood. These car hops don't have an easy time of it. Talk about your mail carriers. Well, we're the same. Raining or blowing or boiling hot, we've got to get through with that tray or know the reason why. Tired, hungry people who sit back in their car and expect $1 million worth of service for a 10-cent tip. Why do we do it? Oh, sure, there are other ways of making a living in Hollywood, but not many that hold that glittering promise that maybe someday, somehow, maybe someone will say...
Why, that girl looks like Lana Turner.
Yeah, at least her hair's done up that way.
You know, I think I could use her in that new picture of mine. I think I'll ask her to come out of the studio.
Yeah, I know. Well, here we go again. Well, maybe it doesn't happen often, but there's always a chance. And there's always that hope. That's what keeps us going, I guess. But there are other things that can happen in a drive-in. Things that aren't on the menu by any manner of means. Like the rainy night I was telling you about when I let Ruth talk me into serving that last car that came in.
Oh, Mildred, please take his order. I've got 3 other cars and I'm waiting for French fries.
Oh, look at the clock, will you? It's near midnight. I'm off duty.
Oh, please, Mildred, just this one more, will you? I'll do the same for you sometime.
But Ruth, oh, what's the matter with him? Can't he read? Please do not honk your horn. That looks clear enough to me.
Well, it's the doctor's car, see? He's probably in a rush. Anybody you got... Anyway, you got nobody waiting.
Oh, all right.
See, thanks a lot.
Well, it was true. No one was waiting for me. Only the bus that had taken me to Glendale, where I lived alone in an apartment. So I buttoned up my raincoat and I took a menu over to the car.
Good evening.
Never mind the menu. Just some black coffee, a pot of it, and a ham sandwich. Please hurry it.
When I took his order over to the car, the window was rolled up a little too far, and it interfered with the tray, so I reached in to wind it down. When I touched the handle, it felt wet and kind of sticky, too, but I didn't think anything about it, and I got the tray firmly set. And then I looked at my hand. It was as red as blood. I looked up quickly at him.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm Dr. Morgan. I just had an emergency in the car.
Oh, an accident?
Yes, Sunset and Vine. Quite a crash. I just happened by, and I took one of them to the hospital.
Oh, gee, that's too bad.
Yes, it was very unfortunate.
I walked back, trying to wipe the blood from my hand with a paper napkin. Ooh, it gave me a creepy feeling to have somebody's blood on my hand. Then I went in to wash. I was keeping close track of the time, and I was a little worried for fear the big drive-in clock wasn't right. It sometimes ran slow. So I took a coin from my pocket. I figured it was worth a nickel not to miss that last bus to Glendale. I walked over to the payphone, and I was just about to drop the nickel in when I looked out, and he was leaning on the horn and beckoning to me at the same time. I put the nickel back in my pocket, and I hurried out to him.
I'm sorry, but I'm in a hurry, and I haven't time for this coffee to cool off. I'll take the sandwich with me. How much do I owe you?
40 cents.
40 cents. Here you are. I hope I didn't interrupt your phone call. Wasn't important, was it?
Oh, no, no. I was just checking on the time. I didn't want to miss my bus.
There was a clock right over your head.
Oh, that's usually wrong.
I have the time. It's about 12:04.
Oh, gee, I am going to miss my bus.
What time does it leave?
At midnight from Hollywood and La Brea.
Well, hop in. I'll take you. I'm going right past there.
Oh, gee, would you? I'll take the tray and I'll be right back.
Okay.
I might still make it. In my hurry to unhook the tray from the window, I gave it a jerk and it fell crashing to the ground. Oh, Ruth!
Bruce, please help me pick these things up, will you? I'm going to miss my bus.
Oh, all right, Mildred, okay.
We picked the things up quickly, and Bruce went off with the tray. I started to run around the other side of the car when I noticed something shining on the ground. It was one of the shakers that had fallen from the tray. I picked it up, and I started running toward the drive-in when he spoke to me.
Why don't you just put that in your pocket? You can return it tomorrow. Come on, you're going to miss your bus.
Well, I put the shaker into my pocket, and I rushed over to the other side of the car, and he opened the door for me. I was just about to get in when I hesitated. I wasn't used to doing this sort of thing. The other girls sometimes let the customers drive them home, but I never did. Still, he looked so decent and...
Come on, you'll miss it.
Then he reached out as if to help me in. And I thought then that he was really concerned about my missing the bus, for... Well, he seemed to pull me into the car. And the thing I knew, I was sitting beside him. And the door slammed. And we were driving off. I was a little uneasy, but then I thought, no, it's only a few blocks, and I won't be in the car long.
I suppose you're in a hurry because someone's waiting for you.
Oh, no, I live alone, but I'd hate to walk back to Glendale in this rain.
You won't have to walk.
Well, this is very nice of you. I appreciate it.
Not at all.
Would you mind rolling up that window on your side? There's a draft.
Oh, of course. You can let me off at that corner over there.
All right.
Anywhere along here will be all right. This is fine. Right over there by that stop sign. Wait, you're going right through that stop signal.
Am I?
Yes. But I'll get over there by the other one. My bus... You're turning the wrong way.
Am I?
Yes. This goes up to Laurel Canyon.
Does it? You thought you were pretty smart, didn't you?
I don't know what you mean. Please let me out of this car.
You went right to the phone. You thought I wouldn't see you.
The phone? But I was calling about the time. Honest it was.
The time? With that clock right over your head?
Oh, but that clock's wrong sometimes. Besides... Who would I call? Why should I call anyone about you?
You were calling the police.
Oh, no. Honest, I wasn't. Let me out of this car.
You were going to catch a bus. You were going straight to the police. That's where you were going.
But why should I go to the police?
You know why.
No, really, I don't.
Because you saw it. You saw his blood.
I...
No, you don't.
Oh, no.
There. You won't need to try to open that door again. Now we'll be getting along.
After I made that last try to get out, and he broke the handle of the door, all the strength seemed to go out of my body. I just sat there as we drove on. We passed a few people and some cars in the next blocks, and I thought of calling out and... And then I knew why he'd asked me to roll up the window when I'd first gotten into the car. And then we were at the mouth of the canyon. And I could see the road dark and lonely up ahead. The car twisted and swerved. My arm ached from his strong fingers that had dug into it when I tried to jump out. I looked at him from the corner of my eye. He hadn't seemed like a criminal back at the drive-in. And he didn't seem like one now. His jaw was black from needing a shave. Still, his face, well, it wasn't like a criminal's at all. It was so tired.
Quit staring at me.
Look, I didn't know anything about you. Honest, I didn't. Please let me go.
You know something about me now.
I won't tell anybody. Whatever it is, I promise you I won't.
A woman's promises. Remind me to tell you a story about a woman and a promise.
Let me out. Please let me out right here.
It's a long way. Back to Glendale.
Well, that's all the better. It'll take me hours to get back, and you'll be miles away by then.
I'm not taking any chances with you, kid.
Please. Oh, please let me out. I've got to get back.
You said no one was waiting for you. You live alone, don't you? No one will miss you.
We both heard the siren then. He looked quickly into the rear vision mirror. Then he took a gun from his pocket, and he turned to me.
If that's for us, and we're stopped, remember this. I've used this gun before tonight, and I can use it again if I have to. If I'm taken, you'll go first. But now listen, I'm a doctor, and you're a nurse, and we're headed on an emergency. If you want to live, you won't try to pull anything. Now remember that. Remember it.
Fast for a wet night, aren't you? Called you all the way up from Hollywood.
I'm Dr. Morgan, and this is Nurse Johnson on an emergency call.
Let's see your identification.
Well, let's see.
He fumbled for his pocket with one hand, holding the gun to my ribs with the other. The motorcycle cop looked over at me. I thought for a moment that I could know him with my eyes. But then I knew he wasn't looking at my face. He was looking down at my white starched blouse, which he could see under my raincoat. He thought it was a nurse's uniform.
Here you are, officer.
Okay, Doc. Sorry I stopped you.
Well, that's that. Hey,
wait a minute.
what's the matter?
I just wanted to tell you. The rain started to slide up there a ways. Better take it easy.
Thanks. I will.
You're not Dr. Morgan, are you?
What do you think?
Then we came to the landslide. It wasn't a big one, but it made a terrible mess of the road. He didn't slow down, and the car swerved crazily as it slipped from one side of the highway to the other. Suddenly, it fell as though the whole rear end had slipped out. I looked over at him. He was tense. His knuckles turned white as he clutched the wheel. He shoved the car into reverse. I hoped it would never, never move. And it didn't. We were stuck. Hopelessly stuck.
Oh, have all the luck.
Suddenly the car was filled with light. A car had come around the curve behind us. This might be my chance.
Remember, I still have this gun. Now, don't try anything.
Hey! We're stuck here. Could you give us a push? Thank you very much.
Well, have some California hospitality. I'll have to get out. I'll have to put something under the wheel. You stay here.
There were some bushes by the side of the road. If I could reach them, I could perhaps run up the side of the hill and hide. And then in the morning, I could make my way back down the canyon. I slipped under the wheel, and I carefully turned the handle of the door on his side of the car. I could see him in the mirror. He was at the back of the car. I eased the door gently open. I put one foot out. I was just sliding out when I heard him.
You're not going any place. Come here. Give me that raincoat.
Why?
I need something dry to stuff under this wheel.
Oh, but I...
You won't be needing it.
I hesitated a moment, but he practically ripped it off my back. He wound it into a ball, and bending down, he stuffed it under the wheel. The gun. It stuck out of his back pocket. If I could get it, if I could lay my hands on it. I held my breath. And I reached out. It seemed so far. But I finally touched it. And then I snatched it from his pocket swiftly.
Give me that gun.
I'm going. You can't stop me now.
Can't I?
No. No, you stay right where you are. I won't hurt you. All I want is to get home. I'm going, but if you follow me, I'll...
You'll what?
I'll kill you.
I don't think you will.
Oh, yes, I will. You think I'm afraid?
Aren't you?
No. I don't care what happens to you. You're a murderer. You killed somebody.
I thought you didn't know anything about
me. I didn't, but I do now, and I'm going to tell the police. Stay where you are. No, don't. I'm not afraid. I'll shoot.
It's too bad I used up all of those tonight. You could have filled me full of holes.
Give me that gun. Now get in the car.
That's better.
Are you going to kill me?
What do you think?
We were nearing the top of the canyon now. The road was very steep. The rain had let up. It was just drizzling now. Even though he hadn't answered my question, I knew the answer. He was going to kill me. I wouldn't get back home tonight. Not tonight or any other night. It was funny. I sometimes used to hate that little apartment of mine where nothing ever happened. But tonight... And then, for some reason, I thought about Ruth. What would she say tomorrow when I didn't show up at work? And then I wondered where they'd find my body.
Well, here we are. Look out, mountain, the top of the world.
Suddenly, we came over the crest of the hill. And way down below, the city stretched out for miles. Millions of lights glittering in the rain. For a moment, I forgot everything. It was the most beautiful sight I'd ever seen.
Ever been up here before?
No.
It's nice, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
I used to come up here with a girl once. We used to sit and talk for hours. Come on. We'll get a better view if we get out.
I knew it was foolish to argue, so I followed him. But as he walked over towards the edge, I became frightened. It was such a steep drop.
Well, come on.
I'm afraid to get so close to the edge.
You won't fall. That's Los Angeles over there. That bright line of lights is Western Avenue. I went to school somewhere along in there. I used to get into all sorts of trouble at school. But I got by. I managed. And everyone said I'd grow out of it. And over that way, towards the ocean, that's Westwood. That's where she lived. This girl I was telling you about. That was the best part of my life, I guess. That's when they said marriage and a wife would straighten me out. Marriage and a wife would straighten me out in Westwood, they said.
Does your wife still live there?
No. She's dead.
Oh, my God.
You needn't be. I killed her.
Oh, why?
Because she couldn't keep her promises.
Did you kill her tonight?
No. A long time ago. The jury said I was insane. But I think it was the sanest thing I ever did. They put me in an asylum. Do you know what it's like being locked up year after year when you know there's nothing wrong with you?
No.
That isn't good. You'd do anything to get out. Anything. Anything.
I knew if I could keep them talking, maybe a car would come along. Maybe something would happen. It was my only chance.
What are you thinking about?
You killed someone else tonight, didn't you?
Yes.
Dr. Morgan?
Yes. He was one of the men who thought I was insane.
Why did you do it?
I wanted his car to get away in. I didn't want to be locked up anymore.
Oh, but they'll catch you.
No. No, they won't find the doctor for several days. I saw to that.
But how can you be so sure?
I do things thoroughly.
What are you going to do now?
First, I'm going to... Oh. Then I guess I'll go south.
I knew what he meant by that pause. I started to back away slowly. I'd made a mistake by reminding him of the present. My hands went instinctively to my pocket for something to defend myself with. I knew there was a pencil there. It was sharp. Maybe I could scratch him or hurt him some way with it. But when I reached for it, I felt something else instead. Something cold and hard. I was puzzled for a moment, and then I remembered it was the shaker I'd picked up at the drive-in.
You can't get away now.
Then he started moving toward me. Me, with only a pencil and a shaker to defend myself with.
It's too bad I came into that drive-in tonight.
Why did you?
Because I was hungry. Because I hadn't eaten for a long time.
Weren't you afraid someone would see you?
No alarm had gone out.
How did you know?
I knew. Oh, I'm sorry. If only you hadn't rolled that window down.
If you're sorry, why don't you let me go?
It's too late.
A car was coming over the top of the hill. With a sudden movement, his arms were about me in a tight embrace. I started to scream, but suddenly his lips closed over mine. Pushing my head back roughly, he kissed me. I could scarcely breathe, and I felt the car's headlights on us like a spotlight.
Well, just look at this view, will you? You know, I'll have to do this in a picture sometime.
Can't you see we're interrupting something?
Hmm?
Drive on, will you?
Where? Oh, in all this rain. You'd think people would have more sense. Come on.
He held me a moment longer. And when the car had gone, he released me. My pencil had fallen to the ground, and I was left with only the shaker in my hand. I fingered it nervously, and then I felt the top coming off. I felt the contents spilling into my hand.
What have you got in your hand?
Nothing.
Give it to me.
No.
Give it to me.
He grabbed my wrist, and he pulled me toward me. We were moving to the edge of the cliff, but my other hand was free, and I threw the contents of the shaker into his face.
Ah!
His hand flew to his face in an effort to clear his eyes. But it was too late. The pepper had blinded him. He lunged out for me, but I stepped aside quickly, and he slipped in the mud. His hands went out to steady himself. He clawed frantically at thin air, and then I saw him falling over backwards, over the edge.
Ah!
And my strength gave away. And I felt myself sinking down to the ground. I don't know how long I must have been there, but when I came to, it was raining again. I was soaked to the skin, and there was mud caked in my hair. And there was no one in sight. The lights of Los Angeles stretched out in a pattern peacefully below, and I knew that somewhere at the foot of those hills was Glendale and my apartment. I rose slowly to my feet, and I started back toward the road. And somehow, everything that had happened seemed unreal, like a dream. Everything.
Whistler's strange story. What makes a murderer?
Murder is a peculiar affair. It's the darkest, most despicable of all crimes. Yet it strikes most frequently among the ranks of people who have never transgressed before. Yes, all it needs in many cases is the right pressure, the right set of circumstances, the right opportunity, and an otherwise respectable member of the community becomes a killer. If you'd tried to explain that to Arthur Winslow, he wouldn't have understood. For Arthur was respectable, solid, exactly like 100 other respectable, solid Jersey commuters. His life was a pretty drab affair. Yes, including the dull days at the office, J.C. Wells and Company, investment broker.
United Wire, 7 1/8, no change.
7 1/8, no change.
Universal Automatic, 39 1/8, off 1/8.
Universal Automatic, 39 1/8, off 1/8.
Vulcan Steel, 77, up 1.
77, up 1. Oh, we better leave it there, Arthur. 5 o'clock. Got to make that 5:19.
Why?
Why?
Yeah. Why do we have to make the 519, Stanley?
Well, why, because we always do.
You think that's a good reason?
What?
I mean, do you think because we've always made the 519, we ought to keep on making it the rest of our lives?
Is something wrong, Arthur?
Oh, maybe. I don't know. I've been thinking, Stanley. For 10 years now, you and I have been analyzing investment securities 8 hours a day, catching the 519 every night, arriving home in East Orange promptly at 6:22, kissing our wives at approximately 6:50, eating dinner at exactly 7, reading the evening paper, and going to bed. It's a little like death, isn't it, Stanley?
What in the world has gotten into you, Arthur?
I've got a book here. Take a look.
A novel.
It got me thinking.
Moon and Sixpence.
Yes, it's about a man like us, Stanley. A man who got fed up with the 519 and dished the whole works.
What did he do?
Took a chance, walked out, just picked up his hat and went off to the South Seas.
He just up and left his family?
They preferred the 519.
Well, I certainly can't say that I approve.
Oh, I didn't think you would. Well, you'd better hurry along, Stanley, or you'll miss your train.
What about you?
Tonight, just for a change, I believe I'll catch the 5:55.
Just for a change, Arthur, after 10 years, you walk slowly down Broad Street, deliberately casual, noticing the swarms of hurrying commuters objectively, as if for the first time. It's pleasant strolling along like this, taking your time, stopping to look in a window now and then. And finally you find yourself in front of Mac's bar. It isn't often you have the time to drop in for a short one, is it, Arthur? Why not? Why not, indeed?
Excuse me. Well, hello, Mr. Winslow.
Hello,
Benny.
Oh, of course. You run the elevator in the Majestic.
That's right. Here, Mr. Winslow, set yourself down right here, buy your drink.
Well, I...
come on. Little Benny's in the chips. I'm fat. I finally knocked over Gus in the back room there.
I beg your pardon.
Oh, sure. I guess you ain't interested in bang tails or you'd know Gus.
Bang tails? Oh, horses.
Yeah.
Well, I don't really pay much attention. You mean that that Gus is a bookie?
Yeah. You ain't never seen a spread back there, huh?
No.
Come on, I'll show you.
Sure it's all right?
Sure. No, it's okay, Harry. Friend of mine. Come on, Mr. Winslow. Well, there it is, pal. There's the board. Tomorrow morning's line. Take your pick. Current odds in that column there.
Oh. Pink Lady. Mike the Second. Big Bonanza. Moon and Sixpence.
Yeah, that's a horse. I've been watching him. Been thinking about playing him in a parlay.
Parlay? What's a parlay?
You don't know what a parlay is?
No.
Ah, easy. You pick three horses, see? For instance, maybe you put your dough on Blue Bonnet in the first. If he comes in, the dough goes on Glowworm in a second. If he comes in...
Oh, yes, I see. Then all the money goes on Moon and Sixpence in the third.
Yeah, I
get it.
Plenty long shot, of course, but there's a big payoff for the gent who's willing to take the chance.
Take a chance, huh?
Believe me, you never get nowhere if you don't take a chance once in a while.
I'll take $10 worth.
Look, I ain't the bookie, pal. He's over there. You got it. Wait a minute. Give me your dough. I'll lay it on for you. $10 in the parlay, huh?
lay it on for me, pal. $10 on Blue Bonnet, Glowworm, and Moon and Sixpence.
Well, Arthur, that was quite a decision for you, wasn't it? You're more than a little pleased with yourself as you saunter onto the 5:55. A complete change of scenery from the 5:19. You're 26 minutes behind all that, and 26 minutes later than usual when you open the door and say...
Hello, dear.
Arthur, where in the world have you been? I've been worried sick. Here, wipe your feet.
I'm sorry, Ethel.
Where have you been?
I was tied up.
What do you mean, tied up? You've never been late to dinner in your life. I don't know why in the world you couldn't have phoned. You know, it's Monday night, and Mr. Dinwiddie expects me at the agency at 7:30 sharp. Did you get your check?
What?
Your paycheck, dear. It's payday.
Oh, yes. I cashed it. Here.
25, 30, 50. Well, you're $10 short.
Yes, Employees Association annual dues.
Is that something new?
Yes, Ethel, that's something new.
$10. I don't know how in the world they expect you to exist on the salary they pay you. If you had enough gumption, you'd do as I say and ask for a raise.
You forgot Mr. Dinwiddie, Arthur. That's an important part of the weekly schedule. Ethel hasn't missed a Monday evening at the children's agency for years. You should have picked another night to miss the 519. You're used to Ethel now. You've become an artist at appearing attentive while she prattles on and on, nodding at the proper moments, never hearing a word. You're relieved when the door finally closes and she's safely off to Mr. Dinwiddie. You can return to Moon and Sixpence, the South Seas, and escape. The next day at the office, Stanley wonders why you're nervous, impatient. Why you dodge him at 5 o'clock. It only takes a minute to hurry over to Mac's bar.
Oh, hello, Benny.
Huh? Oh, it's you. Hey, guys, here he is. Oh,
what do you mean?
Nah, don't tell me you ain't heard.
Now, what is it?
The parlay pal. It came in. Blue Bonnet, Glowworm, Moon, and Sixpence. You got yourself $1,800.
$1,800, Arthur. You can't quite grasp it. That's almost a year's salary, and you're holding it right in your hand. You know what's going to happen, don't you? You walk the streets for an hour or two thinking, but you can't help yourself, so you make a beeline for the nearest phone booth. The South Seas. No more figures. No more 519.
Brighton Travel Agency.
Oh, hello. I'd like to inquire about a reservation.
Yes, sir. Where to?
Well, let's see. Florida.
Very well. And the name, sir?
Oh, yes, the name. The name is Charles White.
Yes, murder can strike anywhere, even among quiet, drab little people like Arthur Winslow. He has no way of knowing it, of course, as he buys a first-class reservation on the train to Florida. His only thought now is that this will be escape at last. New clothes, new luggage, a new name. You're Charles White now, and a new life. No more trading your chance at happiness for a stack of security reports and a bungalow in East Orange. You can see her now, poor, frustrated, stupid Ethel, confiding to Mr. Dinwiddie that you've walked out. No 519 tonight, Arthur. It's the 622 to Florida.
Dad's gone for dinner. Last call for dinner.
Which way is the dining car, waiter?
3 cars back, sir. You better hurry along.
Oh, thank you.
Last call for dinner.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, that's quite all right.
Oh, it isn't either. I wasn't looking.
No, neither was I.
Where is it?
The what?
The book.
Oh, the book, yes.
Well, I knocked it out of your hand. It must be down here on the floor.
Oh, no, here, let me. It's probably under the seat. Now, let me see.
Oh!
Have you got it?
Last year's timetable. Wanted one for ages. Oh, here it is.
Oh, let me help you. Oh, it's a fine thing getting yourself all dusty that way. Turn around.
Thanks. Moon and Sixpence. Hmm?
There, that's a little better anyway.
It's wonderful, isn't it?
What?
Moon and Sixpence. I loved it.
Oh, yes, I haven't quite finished it, of course.
Do you believe it? I mean, do you think it's right?
Oh, you mean to toss everything over and take off at the South Seas?
Uh-huh.
If you don't mind, pal, while you're going to the South Seas, I'll go to dinner.
Oh, I'm very sorry.
Excuse me. Come on, Louise.
We seem to be holding up traffic.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I was just going into dinner myself.
So was I.
Oh, would you consider...
Why not?
Yes, why not? You know, I'm glad that you liked Moon and Sixpence.
Oh, it was a wonderful story. Of course, I can't say it was very realistic.
What do you mean?
Well, I admit it was convincing, but when you start to think about it, this running away business...
You don't believe in it?
Well, after all, running away is no solution.
Sometimes there's nothing else to do.
He could have stuck it out.
Uh-huh. Licked it if it took the rest of his life,
Mm-hmm.
Well, all right. He licks it. He's found happiness at last, and he's 70. I think running away is better than that, don't you?
I did once.
Oh, I'm very sorry.
That's all right. You see, I did run away. It was just as you said, a routine, a deadly routine, and when I couldn't stand it any longer, I ran away.
What kind of a routine?
Keeping up with my father. Perhaps you've heard of him. Edgar Brewster.
The Edgar Brewster?
Yes, the Wall Street Edgar Brewster. He's in Miami now, waiting for me.
Oh, I see.
I'd finally decided to go back and face it, but now you've got me confused.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, don't misunderstand. You've really helped a lot.
How do you mean?
You seem to know why I did it. It's kind of moral support.
Oh.
You're going to Miami?
Yes. by the way, I'm Charles White.
I'm Vivian Brewster.
Perhaps I'll see you in Miami.
I hope so.
So do I.
The daughter of Edgar Brewster. Edgar Brewster, the millionaire. A big name on Wall Street, isn't it, Arthur? And you talked with his daughter, had dinner with her. She even said she'd hoped you'd meet in Miami. You wait for her call. And then finally it comes, Arthur. You're invited to the Brewster home. You can hardly believe it, can you? A few days ago, an obscure clerk. Tonight, you're sitting with Edgar Brewster drinking his bourbon.
That about right, Mr. White?
Father's a tightwad with his soda.
Oh, that's an outrageous way to drink good bourbon. What about it, White?
Well, that looks about right, Mr. Brewster.
All right, there you are.
Oh, thank you.
What are you doing in Miami, White?
Oh, I got a little tired of New York.
Oh, you've got the right idea. I did the same thing myself 20 years ago, and I never went back. What's your line?
Oh, I was in the market, more or less.
The less, the better these days. Nobody knows where it's going. My broker and I were talking today about Consolidated Plastics. Do you know anything about it?
Oh, a little.
What do you think of it?
Well, I don't know whether I should say...
What's the matter with it?
Well, after all, it's your business, Mr. Brewster. I wouldn't want to offer an opinion.
All right, I'll put it this way. What would you do if you were into it pretty heavily right now?
Well, I'd sell out.
When?
Right now.
Any particular reason?
Well, only that I happen to know it's a bad investment. I can't tell you why.
Why, that's unbelievable. My broker told
me... Yes, I know. It's only my opinion, Mr. Brewster, but I happen to know that company's financial position. You asked me what I'd do, and I told you.
You seem to know what you're talking about.
Well, investments are my hobby, you might say.
I see. Go on, my boy. You interest me.
And so, for the next half hour or so, you go on chatting with Edgar Brewster. And he's impressed with what you have to say. You can see that clearly enough, can't you, Arthur? Hints, tiny scraps of information, tips. You know the market so well, Arthur. And Mr. Brewster listened eagerly. Yes, and that was the beginning, wasn't it, Arthur? That $1,800 was a magic door, opening up a thrilling new life for you. And incidentally, bringing you closer to murder. The next 3 weeks passed like a dream, like the nights at the beach club dancing in the open under the stars, with Vivian in your arms.
Vivian?
Yes?
Why is it you've never asked me about myself, my background, where I came from?
Well, I don't know. Maybe because it doesn't matter.
I wasn't going to tell you, but I think perhaps I'd better.
Will it make any difference?
About us?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it will make a difference. A lot of difference.
Then don't tell me. I don't want to know.
But Vivian, I...
Please.
Darling, did I ever tell you that I like you very much?
I'm glad, Charles. I'm so glad.
You're in love, Arthur. And for the first time in your life, you know what love really is. Mr. Brewster begins to concern you. He'll never approve in a million years. Or you think so, until that evening he drops up to your hotel room with a copy of the Financial Journal in his hand.
Look at that, Charles.
What is it?
Don't ask silly questions. Look at it, man.
Oh, I thought so.
Consolidated Plastics snowed under in selling rush.
I'm sorry, Mr. Brewster.
Well, I'm not.
What do you mean?
I took your advice. Sold out 3 weeks ago. Saved myself $100,000.
Well, congratulations.
Well, don't congratulate me. You're the one who deserves it. Do you mind if I sit down?
Oh, I'm sorry. Here you are.
Oh, thanks. Would you be open to a proposition, wife?
What kind of a proposition?
Oh, I realize you probably have other interests, but I could make this worth your while, I think. There are two considerations.
Yes.
The first is the plain fact that my affairs are getting a little beyond me. As you know, I'm retired, haven't time to look after them properly. I think you're the man to take over.
But, Mr. Brewster,
wait till I'm finished. I've watched you pretty closely during the past month or so. I can tell you no investments. You're sure of yourself. And I'm not just being generous, White. I'm a businessman. If it weren't a profitable deal for me, I wouldn't think of it.
I see. What is the other consideration?
I believe you're aware of that already. Vivian.
You approve?
I do.
Oh, well, can I think this over?
Oh, of course. Just let me know in a day or so.
There it is, Arthur. Brief and to the point. Everything you ever wanted right in the palm of your hand. Open sesame, he said, and there it was. You go into the bar downstairs to think. There's only one thing in your way now. Your wife, Ethel. You can't run away from that. You've got to make her see your side of it. You've got to go back to New Jersey and face her. Make her give you a divorce. You walk out of the bar, through the door into the hotel lobby. And just as you're rounding the corner by the desk, something stops you in your tracks.
Mrs. Ethel Winslow, 5769 Laurel Road, East Orange, New Jersey. Is that all you want?
Yes, thank you, madam.
Could I see the register, please?
Oh, I'm sorry, madam. We don't...
I understand there's a Charles White registered here.
Yes, madam. Room 132. Oh, he's a friend?
Yes.
Well, in that case, I could give you room 134 next door. The windows open onto the same balcony.
Very well. 134.
It was too good to last, Arthur. Just a beautiful dream, and you're just waking up. It's all over. You go back in the bar and think. Ethel, your wife, here in Miami, she's found you. And she'll never let you go, will she? You know her too well, Arthur. You're beginning to see now what makes a murderer. There's no other way out, is there, Arthur? You sit in the friendly darkness of the bar all afternoon, late into the evening, thinking. It's almost 11 when you make up your mind. There's a phone booth near the door.
Hello?
Vivian, I have to talk to you. It's important.
Charles, what's the matter?
Vivian, I love you more than I dreamed I could ever love anyone. Now listen, I'm a phony. My name is not White. I was running away when you met me. I'm just an investment clerk. No money.
Darling,
I have a wife. I've hated her for 10 years, and I'd rather be dead than go back to her, and I'm not
Charles.
Going back to her. And now I probably won't ever see you again.
Oh, wait.
Goodbye,
please,
Vivian.
Don't.
11 o'clock, Arthur. You've got it all planned. Ethel is asleep in a room. Room 134. A balcony connects it with yours. It's a hot night, and the window is probably open.
Yeah.
There she is, and she's asleep. As you slip into the room, you take a firm hold on the heavy brass candlestick you picked up from the mantel in your room. A blunt instrument, the police will say. You can hardly breathe, Arthur. Your stomach is full of ice water. You feel your heart's going to burst. Careful, Arthur. Careful.
I'm sorry, Ethel. I'm sorry, but I've got to kill you. I've got to do it.
So you stand there, Arthur, by your wife's bedside, holding the candlestick high over your head, ready to bring it down. Now you know what makes a murderer. But you can't do it, can you? The wife you've hated for 10 years at your mercy. You can't do it.
No. No, I can't.
What? Arthur! Arthur!
I'm sorry, Ethel. I'm sorry I waked you.
Turn the light on. Don't stand there.
Yes, Ethel.
So you thought you could get by with it, didn't you?
No, Ethel, I didn't.
Don't deny it. I know what's been going on, and I can prove it, you philanderer.
Ethel, I tell you... What did you say?
I have a complete report on your activities for the past month. You weren't very clever, Arthur. The detectives say you left a trail a child could follow.
What are you getting at, Ethel?
Charles? Charles? Listen, there's someone knocking on your door. A woman.
Vivian.
Yes, Vivian. I've already had a talk with her, Arthur. Well, she might as well come in. This way, Miss Brewster. Charles. Oh, Charles, darling.
Vivian.
A pretty picture indeed. And you have the nerve to ask me what I'm getting at. Well, for your information, Arthur, I'm leaving for Reno in the morning. In view of what's happened, I don't think you'll feel it wise to contest the case.
Contest it?
We've waited 5 years for a chance like this.
We?
Mr. Dinwiddie and I.
Dinwiddie? Oh, no.
He's a wonderful man. Goodness, I don't know how I could have put up with you all these years if it hadn't been for Mr. Dinwiddie. He's so understanding.
Dinwiddie?
Arthur, you look so ridiculous. What are you doing holding that silly candlestick in your hand?
I sell a line of plastics, and I travel on the road, and I have a case of samples, which, believe me, is a load. Every night a strange cafe, a strange hotel, and then early in the morning, I am on the road again. When the season's over and my lonesome journey ends, that's the only time I see my family and my friends. I drive up Ocean Parkway, and before I stop the car, my ma leans out the window and she hollers, "Here we are. Shake hands with your Uncle Max, my boy. And here is your sister, Cheryl. And here is your cousin, Isabel. That's Irving's oldest girl. And you remember the Tishman twins, Gerald and Jerome. We all came out to greet you and to wish you welcome home. Meet Merowitz, Barowitz, Handelman, Shandelman, Sperber and Gerber and Steiner and Stone. Moskowitz, Lupowitz, Aronson, Berenson, Kleinman and Feynman and Friedman and Cohn. Smolowitz, Wallowitz, Teitelbaum, Mandelbaum, Levin, Levinsky, Levine and Levi. Brumberger, Schlumberger, Minkus and Thinkus and Stein with an E-I and Stein with a Y. Shake hands with your Uncle Sal, mine boy. And here is your brother Sid. And here is your cousin Yetta, who expects another kid. Whenever you're on the road, mine boy, wherever you may roam, we'll all be here when you come back to wish you well.
About this world of ours, and ever in search of the finest of its kind, we bring you the tops in Spine Chillers.
And you are listening to Radio Masterpieces on Valley 103.1, serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge. The door is slowly closing for Radio Masterpieces, but be sure and tune in again next week from 9 to 10 p.m. to listen to more wonderful mysteries from the 1940s and 50s. This is Bruce Kaplan signing off. Radio Masterpieces is a Seattle Miracle Incorporated production.